All right, now we have Dr. Stergios Roussos from the San Diego State School of Public Health, and he is going to be speaking on practical skill-based training to improve HIV screening when a third person is used as an interpreter, a case study with limited English proficient Latino patients.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So I know who's in the room, how many people here have ever interpreted professionally, unprofessionally, in any way, talked for somebody else? Okay. This might be a little more fun for you. We did a study on HIV screening for Latinos in Merced, California. This was a collaborative participatory research study with Golden Valley Health Centers and San Diego State University. No disclosures. And as just some brief background on demographics, as many of you know, obviously Latinos are the largest growing ethnicity in the United States. Most of them in the United States are from Mexico, where we live in Merced, California. The majority are from Mexico. AIDS and HIV is much higher among Latinos than it is for the general population of whites. And one thing that's happening in our area, it's probably also happening throughout the country, is the rates of AIDS among Latino women is also increasing faster and faster. In California, we have probably one of the largest rates of prevalence of AIDS among the border states. And how many people here are from the border states, just to get an idea? Okay. In 2002, 20% of the AIDS cases were from Latinos, and 44% were among Mexicans. In terms of screening, we know that Latinos are probably more likely to be diagnosed late. And that obviously causes different kinds of problems. They're over twice as likely as whites to cite more communication problems. And that could be language related or culture related, but they have more communication problems than the general population. Among providers, 70% report communication problems when working with Latino patients, and in a way that actually compromises care, whether it's screening or treatment or both. The Latinos are also the largest proportion in the United States among all ethnicities with some type of limited English proficiency. They report not speaking English well. So that leads us to, well, what happens when you are in front of a provider and you may be at risk for HIV, and how does that provider communicate with you when you don't speak English? The results I'm going to present to you today are part of a larger study, which was actually looking at screening practices of providers. And what I'll be sharing with you today is the training component, where we actually spent some time training physicians on how to work with interpreters in a way that might increase screening for HIV. The setting at Golden Valley, we have 25 fairly qualified health centers. They serve Merced and Stanislaus counties, which is smack in the middle of California, primarily an agricultural region. The community health centers have been around for quite some time, since 1972. They provide a lot of services. The main thing is that the predominant patient pool is Latino, as well as the staff. And over 85% of the staff are bilingual Spanish. So a lot of services are provided directly in Spanish when a medical assistant or someone else is actually serving the patient. But when it comes to the providers themselves, not all the providers speak Spanish. They're not bilingual. So they often rely on the bilingual staff that you see here to actually interpret for them. Demographics, we didn't have, Merced is a fairly small community, and the demographics in terms of HIV risk factors come from a smaller study that was done primarily on farm workers, which were predominantly male. We have mostly a young population of farm workers. They're usually single, they're here alone working, and they come from small towns. They also work in non-agricultural jobs. In terms of risk factors, they're common to what people would find in Los Angeles and other places. Usually alcohol use, especially during intercourse, those would be high risk factors for some kind of unprotected sex. Drug use, tattoos, promiscuity to some extent, having sex with sex workers. Since they're far away from home, they might be isolated and lonely, and they're more likely to exhibit unsafe sex. 4% actually in our area, which we thought was high, knew someone with AIDS, and 9% were actually personally tested for HIV. The clinical conditions where the study is actually taking place, so you get a sense of who you're training, they're probably not different than many places that you have all experienced. Health promotion and disease prevention are not the priorities. People are coming to the clinic for other reasons. They're coming because they have a problem that's probably not regard to prevention. Very busy clinic environment. Providers are seeing many patients every day. The chief complaint is usually not HIV or AIDS related. And there are visit quotas, meaning that you have to rush through. You have 5, 10, 15 minutes at most to get through your patient visits. So that makes for a very different encounter, especially when you're about to work with someone who doesn't speak English. So I'm going to use Tanya. Look over here. It's just a very brief idea before I go into what happened and what the results were. So don't look on the screen. Don't look here either. Okay. So Tanya's going to serve as my interpreter. So come over here to the microphone. Just look over here to the wall.
Okay.
It's hard to do this, you know, presentation-wise. So you're going to repeat what I say, okay, as best you can. Listen carefully because these instructions could save your life.
Listen carefully because these instructions could save your life.
Your radio telephone is vital for emergency communications. Set the squelch so you can understand distant signals. Give it a good shot. Just whatever you can consider.
Your radio something, something. Yeah.
Okay.
Can't get it.
Now, Tanya, in an emergency, always use channel 16. It has a frequency of 156,800 megahertz for sending and receiving. And the SSB distress and calling frequency is 2182 kilohertz. There are three spoken emergency signals that show the degree of severity of the emergency, mayday, pan, and security, pronounced security.
I got the channel 16 in an emergency.
Security.
Security. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Now, I don't know where this came from because I'm not in this area, but you're going to get the gist of what's going on here. The results I'm going to share with you are in a situation where we do have bilingual staff who are there at the clinic, so they know the providers well, and they know medical situations. They may not be trained in medical terminology, but they probably could do well. I mean, if you were actually in this field, you could probably remember some things a little bit better, but you may not have any training in interpreting, so you don't know how to slow me down. You don't know how to clarify things. You do the best you can with the conditions that you have. And that's how most of our providers and bilingual staff are out there. Does this sort of ring true for people out there who have interpreted? Okay. So, common myths. Interpreting is simple. All bilinguals know how to interpret intuitively. You're just born to it, naturally. Well, in the reality is it's not the case, as we've just seen. Bilinguals speak two languages equally well. We found that that's not the case, and you'll see how that plays out with the results. They rarely speak both languages well. We're actually finding in our area a lot of the medical assistants are younger staff who may not speak Spanish very well, but speak English quite well. They readily know vocabulary in two languages, very unlikely, especially if they're not native speakers, and that they're also bicultural, and that's probably one of the larger myths, is even if they speak Spanish well, they may not really understand the culture, the Mexican culture as well, as at least what our patients were representing in Merced. So we brought together a team. This is, again, a collaborative study. We did quite a bit of background research on what's out there. We brought in content experts from Mexico as well as from the Bay Area who had done a lot of work in HIV prevention. We spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out, well, how do we make a difference given this very difficult situation? The primary goals of the training were to increase provider knowledge and skills, and we really wanted to focus on sexual health, not just HIV and AIDS, because we realized that in our provider situation, they didn't see HIV AIDS very important among Latinos. So we broadened it to sexual health and focused more on working effectively with an interpreter. An interpreter in this situation are bilingual staff who interpret. They're not trained professional interpreters. The secondary outcome for the training was really the primary outcome for the intervention, which is to actually find a tangible difference in screening rates and HIV tests. We kept it to 3 hours, which was still a challenge. Realistically, in a busy clinical setting, 2 hours is too much. But we managed to squeeze out 3 hours, and we really made a point not to do a lot of didactic and lecture. 15 minutes out of those 3 hours were anyone talking to you in front of, just like I am now. The majority was done doing simulations and role play, because that is what we would give people a chance to actually practice and see some of the facts that we covered in the 15 minutes. The facts were fairly basic, and I'll tell you a little bit about what those were, but the main point was to get people to experience common scenarios that they're likely to experience back at work and give them performance feedback. Show them what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, and give them a chance to practice as much as possible. We had a formal debrief period, about 30 minutes, as a group to make sure everybody knew what did we learn, how you can apply it. We did a pre and post survey. We also videotaped. We had someone videotaping the role plays and interactions throughout the whole 3 hours. And, of course, food and drink were readily available for everybody throughout the whole 3-hour period. The content, a lot on cultural barriers, not just on language, because the assumption was that we can actually get people to work with an interpreter effectively. But the cultural barriers often prevent the providers from actually working with an interpreter very well. They may have a lot of biases of what happens and what doesn't happen. So we did focus quite a bit on what are those cultural beliefs and values that you may not understand as a provider. How do you find out what they are? How do you probe into homosexuality with a young gay Latino man? Things like that were probably more difficult than how to use the interpreter. The language barriers, again, we focused, and you'll see how, on just working with an interpreter. And we did try to place this in the context of an office busy visit. So we did not give people a lot of time. We planned around 6-minute visits when we did the role plays. So we had 3 role plays, an annual female exam, which is a perfect time to start asking some questions about partners, relationships, fidelity, sexual health. Migrant farm labor, one of the most common visits among men in our clinics, because men don't visit the clinic very often. And then a young adult male, which probably would probe a little more into issues of promiscuity or maybe having sex with men but not identifying yourself as gay. We divided up in teams. There were 2 different groups that were trained of 15 providers. Each provider took turns playing the patient, the interpreter, and the provider. Now, they all spoke in English, but we created a situation where the interpreter would have to whisper to each other back and forth, and this took a little bit of practice and a lot of people going around the room making sure everybody followed the rules. So it was very artificial, but it was amazing what came out just with something artificial like that. So whoever played the interpreter, which was also a physician playing the interpreter, would be whispering to the patient and the provider back and forth to accomplish certain things that each skit had. And each skit had certain risk factors as well as interpreting challenges. So the patient would have to speak faster, or the provider, which came very natural, spoke fast anyway. And so we built in interpreting challenges around cultural barriers and interpreting barriers, and they had to remember what we taught them in 15 minutes and then practice it. They each did it 3 times, so they got a chance to get some feedback and figure out, okay, how do I do it right? We collected quite a bit of information, but I'm only going to share some of the highlights with you right now. This was kind of interesting because, as many of the providers that you know, if they're working with the Latino population, they're pretty familiar with what to do in terms of how do I show respect. This was one of many questions. Respect is very important in a patient who does not feel respected by their doctor and may be dishonest when discussing sexual issues during a visit. So we asked people to rate that at 1 to 5. And this is the mean averages. We put everyone together to adjust for outliers, and these are the mean averages for those groups, 34 physicians. There were no statistically significant differences between the groups, so we just lumped the data here for your, make it easier to look at it. But obviously, both before and after training, providers knew that this was something they had to do. No miracle there. Few Mexican men in migrant and seasonal work in the USA exhibit sufficient behavioral risk to place them at high risk for HIV infection. How many of them said false? So 73% at pre-training and 87. And this was interesting because realistically literature isn't very clear on where we stand here. But I know in our area in Central Valley, most of our providers do not think our Latino men are at risk. They just, for some reason, Latino men are just not at HIV risk. That's the common belief. So it didn't jump up tremendously, but there was a difference in terms of what happened after the training. People started seeing that, I think I've seen patients that may have been at risk, but I just never checked for them. Self-rating, again, 1 to 5, on your skill level to screen Latino patients for HIV and sexually transmitted infections during times when there are language and cultural barriers between the patient. We jumped from 82 to 93. And these are statistically significant differences, the one I've actually posted up here. Self-rating on your ability to work with employees. These are the bilingual staff employees who interpret to communicate with patients that do not speak the same language as you. We jump from 83 to 92. Relatively high. Now, if you ask the interpreters, this was only focusing on providers, but the larger study that looked at the interpreters would probably not rate their providers at 83% knowing how to work with them very well. So this was a little different, but the providers felt fairly confident, even though we saw an improvement. We asked several questions about what do you do right, what should you do under certain situations. This was one of them that was quite different. So when you're trying to improve communication through an interpreter, how many providers selected this option? How many said yes to this option? Speak only 1 or 2 short sentences at a time so that the interpreter can remember what you said and communicate it to the patient. What I just did with Tanya, for example, right? So we thought this was critical because everyone, both patients and providers, know that this is something that should happen, and of course it bumped up. Now, the video observations were fantastic. So we had two sessions where we videoed, and we sat around as a group, as the research team, which included both academic researchers and the people from the staff and the clinics, and we watched the videos, which actually focused on the role plays as they were happening to see how people were doing. And then during the debrief, we asked people what was going on. And it was amazing the amount of frustration that occurred. So even though they were all providers, these were all physicians divided up in threes, the physician who played the interpreter at any one time was blamed for just not doing a good job. How come you're not whispering clear enough to me? How come you're not saying what they're saying? Now, it was a little hard because they could probably eavesdrop on each other, but it was still, in an artificial situation, frustrating on getting the message clear. Most interpreters felt rushed. Hurry up, because they only had 6 minutes, and they had to cover certain things in 6 minutes, so they felt very rushed. The interpreter role was overwhelmingly difficult, so the providers gained an appreciation of how difficult interpreting can be and how they can be helpful. By the third role play, both in video observations and in the debrief, we actually started seeing providers doing things like slowing the conversation down, asking for clarification. The people who were playing the interpreter actually learned some things as well, which was a secondary outcome because that wasn't our primary role. All the role plays, no one actually was able to identify all the risk factors that were built into the role plays or the interpreting challenges. But you started seeing signs of learning what was going on. Some of the limitations that I think came out of this, out of the training, that interpreters usually summarize and they edit what happens. There was a lot of summarizing. So the persons who played interpreting, the interpreter role, were summarizing what was happening for the provider and the patient. Oftentimes they don't understand the patient's or provider's message, and they don't seek clarification. They do the best they can, but they don't necessarily clarify things. They lack adequate vocabulary, and you'll see that especially when it comes to screening, HIV screening, and they're lacking vocabulary both from a medical terminology point of view, but also from more of how do you say this in this culture point of view. And they're often speaking for the provider and the patient, and that can be dangerous. They really should serve more as an intermediate between the provider and the patient and not try to act as the patient or the provider. That becomes a little bit dangerous. Conclusions, the providers definitely enjoyed the skill-based training. I think most of them were expecting 3 hours of lecture. So the fact that we focused it on 15 minutes and we had to play with each other and learn by playing, they give us a lot of positive scores on satisfaction ratings. And this training is still going on in the same way today. So this happened about 2.5 years ago. So the clinics are still including this training. The role plays really worked out for them. We did see differences, important differences. But sustainability issues were tough, as was probably mentioned earlier with the couples training for HIV. The larger study did not find statistically significant effects in actual screening. So even though we saw self-reported differences in the video observations during the training, it didn't really play out that way when they got back to the office, and that was tough. We did a booster training, and the same thing happened. The effects just did not last. We did think that probably tip sheets and how-to cards that's reinforced what the training covered would be helpful. We started using those, but they weren't part of the intervention. But we're finding people enjoy those kinds of things you can put in your pocket and remember what to do. And then ongoing training. To this day, even though this training is continuing, providers and staff are asking for different kinds of training, more advanced training that takes them beyond just learning how to slow down the communication to how do I clarify meaning. Things that might be more difficult when you're actually working with an interpreter to try to screen for HIV. That is it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Next, we have Aaron Vissman from Wake Forest University. And this